This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by MM Comfort Systems.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
All right, so we're going to change it up a little bit here. We have to, because Jake isn't here, and usually he gets three of the four questions. Instead, Curtis is going to ask Stacy and I alternating questions. Curtis, are you ready?
I am so ready, Tom. You don't even know.
All right. Stacy goes first. Go ahead.
First down.
First down, Stacy. What does it mean to have a contract tied to a percentage of the salary cap?
So this is something that Adam Schefter tweeted a couple minutes ago. I'm just going to read it verbatim. There are no official numbers on Patrick Mahomes' 10-year extension just yet, but multiple sources believe it ultimately will be tied to a percentage of the salary cap for each season. The higher the cap goes, the more Mahomes will make. So there's a report back in early 2019 when the Seahawks and Russell Wilson were in the middle of negotiations for a contract extension that Wilson's agent, Mark Rogers, was pushing for a cap percentage-based contract. This was from Ian Rappaport, so I tend to think there's, you know, legs there. But basically what it would mean, I know it seems obvious, but Wilson would have been the first player to do this. It would tie a percentage rather than an actual cap hit. So right now, at the end of in the final year of Wilson's deal, I think his cap hit is like $39 million or something like that. So instead of $39 million, it would say, 15%. So that might be $39 million, but if the NFL continues to grow, and presumably you're one of the faces of the NFL and you're helping that, 15% of a salary cap in 2025 or 2030 might be like 40 something million. So who knows where it could go. It basically ensures that as the salary cap increases, the quarterback gets paid more money rather than a smaller percentage of the cap. It doesn't mean the team can't sign people, but it just kind of ensures essentially a yearly raise each year for the quarterback. So again, this didn't end up happening for Russell Wilson, but if it happens with Mahomes, and it sounds like it is, he will be the first player ever to do this, which means that cap hit in, or the actual cap number in like 2030, 31, the final year of his deal. Man, if the NFL continues to grow at the rate that it has, you could be looking at like 50 plus million.
Second down. All right, now, Curtis, hold on. I need to explain what we're doing here. Since I'm useless when it comes to football stuff, the business of football, X's and O's, etc. The type of stuff you get from Jake and Stacy every day. The only thing I'm really pretty darn good at is trivia. Uh-huh. That's what we're going to give you right now. Curtis is going to ask me some trivia, and hopefully it'll be informative where it'll be worth your having heard me answer the question. Go ahead, Curtis.
Oh, yeah, it'll be good. Tom, right. Who was, in honor of Patrick Mahomes' 10-year, reportedly $400 million extension, who was the very first player in NFL history to sign two separate $100 million contracts?
Two separate $100 million contracts. God, if it's Tom Brady, I'm going to kill you, but I'm going to go with Peyton Manning.
That is incorrect. The correct answer would be Michael Vick.
Yay!
Who signed a 10-year, $130 million deal in 2004, which was voided because he went to prison. And then in 2011, signed a 6-year, $100 million deal with the Eagles.
He did? He got another $100 million deal out of the Eagles? How much longer did he even play after that? Like another year or two?
2011 is when he signed it. He remained their starting quarterback through 2013. So I don't believe he saw the entirety of that $100 million. 40 of it was guaranteed, but it's still $100 million he could have earned in total.
That's still ridiculous. A 10-year deal for a guy who lost that much time in his career, for how old he was, for how injury think about this. Patrick Mahomes is he's semi-injury prone. He's had, a couple of dings here and there. He's had a couple of dings here and there. That's all I'm saying. Vic was always hurt. That's a terrible investment.
Yeah, all Vic never started more than 13 games in a season with the Eagles.
Wow.
And they still gave him $100 million.
Isn't it weird thinking Russell Wilson has never missed a game?
Yes, it's extremely weird. All right, third down.
third down to Stacy.
Me.
Does Patrick Mahomes' deal make it more likely the Seahawks could sign and trade for Chiefs defensive tackle Chris Jones?
It's an interesting question. The trade thing is important. So one thing that we do have to stress is that Jones has been franchise tagged, so he couldn't just become a free agent. I mean, unless the Chiefs were absolutely insane and like released him or something. If he holds out, he holds out and he's not playing. So the Seahawks or any other team would have to first trade to acquire him. Now, usually the deadline to sign a contract extension when you've been franchise tagged falls in mid-July. I'm not sure exactly what day it is this year, but it's obviously coming up soon. So you're going to be hearing increasing talks about the two sides and their contract conversations. I'd have to think after this deal, Jones's chances of getting a big deal probably fall. So maybe he signs, maybe he doesn't sign the 1 year deal and decides to play, and then he's playing for 1 year under that franchise tag, and then he goes to another team. Or maybe another team comes in and offers the Chiefs a deal they can't refuse, brings in Jones, and then presumably signs him to a big contract extension. It'll be a big number. And that's the second part of this, why I don't think that team will be the Seahawks. They barely have the cap space to like try to make a move for Jadeveon Clowney. I think Jones could command an even bigger contract, and I don't see the Seahawks being part of this. I'd be surprised. Pleasantly surprised, but surprised.
Fourth down.
Tom, if Cam Newton starts a game for the New England Patriots, he will have become their first quarterback in quite some time to start a game for them that was not drafted by the organization. So my question to you is, who was the last quarterback to start a game for New England that was not drafted by the Patriots?
Okay. I think we're... Oh, to start a game that wasn't drafted by the Patriots?
Yeah.
God, was it... Okay. It's got to be... If it's in the Brady era, my answer would be Flutie. If it's in the Bledsoe era, I want to say like Zolak or Hugh Millen or somebody like that.
Who played for the Patriots when Brissett didn't play or when he was traded?
Jacoby Brissett. It was
because he was drafted.
Okay,
started
they were
those
both four
drafted.
Games.
Okay.
Yeah, they were both drafted by the Patriots.
Then I don't know the answer.
None of those answers are correct.
Hold on a second, man. I'm talking to myself.
He's thinking out loud.
You know? All right. I'm talking with the people. All right. Well, I guess now that I know that none of those guys. Let's see. Okay. Not drafted. How about. God, did Damon Heward start a game? How about Damon Heward?
No, he did not start a game for the Patriots either.
Let me Hoyer?
No, he was drafted by the Patriots. Let me take you back to Halloween 1993. In a 9-6 loss against the Indianapolis Colts, one Scott Seacules went 23 of 37 for 279 yards and two interceptions.
That was the last time?
Yeah, 1993. He went to University of Virginia. In fact, that was the only time he ever made a start during his four-year NFL career. He started four games for the Patriots that year, but his last start came against the Colts
for
on
how
Halloween.
Long ago that was, I just Googled this. Top movies in 1993. The original Jurassic Park, The Sandlot, and Dazed and Confused. That's how long it's
Confused
been.
That's one of my favorites of all time.
But that's how long it's been. It's insane.
You know,
Mrs. Doubtfire.
I've never even heard. What, Scott Seacules? I've never even heard of him, Curtis.
Well, Tom, he had the longest pass completion of the season in the NFL in 1993, 82 yards. So, I mean,
to who? Urban Fryer?
Probably.
I think you mean to whom, Tom?
To whom? Yeah, that's what I said. man, you know what's sad about my performance today is that I do better with the Know Your Seahawk quiz than I do with like the general Curtis Rogers trivia.
Do you, Tom?
Like, I got to do better at this. Yeah. I did pretty well the last couple of
You
times.
Did, actually. Well, the last time you did really well.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll try that again tomorrow. We'll have some fun. Before Shana Dreher comes on in a few minutes, you guys were talking in the break there, though, about how Patrick Mahomes, about how rich, how wealthy this kid is about to become.
24 years old.
Wealthy. He's 24 years old. And you were asking, like, what would you do with that money if you were 24 years old? I can't even think. I'm about to turn 41 this month, and I can't think of anything, like any one specific thing I would do with the money other than just acknowledge the freedom that I now have to do whatever I want minute to minute. That's it. I wouldn't buy, like, you know, anything specific.
Then you're not like doing it right. Club. No, I would go full blank check where it's like, I'm going to put a giant slide. I'm going to build a giant slide going from one story of my new mansion to the next story to the next story. I'm going to buy a Taco Bell and put it in my house that I can go to anytime I want. I mean, obviously, you've got to have like at least 25 cars, at least. One of those has to be a hot air balloon. I might buy a blimp. Do they still have those? Can you ride in those?
They do.
That's what I want. It's just, I'm going to be reckless. You know what I'd probably do, actually? If you grow up like a certain way for most of your life and then you get money, I feel like you'd still, I don't know that I'd change my lifestyle where I'm buying designer clothes or whatever because I already don't do that. I'm just spending ridiculous amounts of money on cheap clothes. Like, I'm going to go drop like $5,000 at H&M.
Oh, I love H&M. How much money do you think it costs to buy a blimp? I have the answer.
I'm going to say $8,700, Tom.
$8,700? That blimp's going to crash for that money.
Okay. I'm going to say $25,000, Tom.
$21 million
what?
For the Goodyear blimp.
No. Are you sure?
Wow.
What about for a generic non-branded blimp? Maybe
a used blimp.
A used blimp, one without the Goodyear.
Certified pre-owned.
Yeah. You want the
certified pre-owned blimp?
Yeah.
I want the papers
I think the best way to go with the blimp is you can rent one for $1,200 a day, depending on the size and the amenities.
That if I'm Patrick Mahomes, that becomes very affordable. I am taking a blimp to and from work every day.
To and from the games. They got one flying over Arrowhead Stadium.
What like mile per hour do we think blimps are hitting?
Seven.
I don't know. They can't be going that fast.
I bet it's faster than you think. I bet it's like 25. 50 miles per hour.
Now,
yes.
50 miles? Yeah, maybe.
Top speed. Goodyear blimp. 50 miles per hour. I'm buying it. Well, no, but Patrick Mahomes should.
Yeah, well deserved. For those of you who missed it earlier, the big news of the day, Patrick Mahomes making bank, getting a $10 deal out of the Kansas City Chiefs. We don't know do we get any figures yet on this or no?
Adam Schefter said over multiple sources say over 400. Oh, wait, 5 minutes ago. No. 10-year extension worth over $400 million, though it's still uncertain how much over. So the lowest his 12-year deal could be, given that he still has 2 years on his contract, is $427.6 million, though the deal is sure to be more. So we're looking at 10-year, at least like $430 million.
And it's believed that the contract, at least some of it, is tied to a percentage of the salary cap. That's just an unbelievably good investment. Because as you said before, the way that works with the salary cap going up, up, up every year, it's like it's money that is guaranteed to appreciate over the span of that contract. Mm-hmm. As long as that part of it is guaranteed, whether they cut him or not, or they end up trading him to another team. See, how does that work? What if they want to trade him to another team? How does that work with that contract? That team then has to give him a percentage of that salary cap. That does make him untradeable, I would think, if he gets hurt.
It is interesting because, again, it's something that hasn't been done before. Although, again, I think with the way that Patrick Mahomes is seen as so universally, unanimously just the best, I don't know that another quarterback that's coming up here like Dak Prescott could command the same amount. But I do think it paves the way for quarterbacks, probably starting with quarterbacks and then eventually maybe to other players. I do think it paves the way for them to ask for a percentage of the salary cap. I think that's something that we could see more of in the years to come. I don't know how quickly that'll be, but you have to think that's just how sports work. I feel like if you see it once, it's probably going to come up again because there's going to be someone else that comes along that's going to be really, really, really good.
Nope, Mahomes, he's the last
one. He's the last
one. No one ever as good as him.
Nope.
Ever again.
I'm trying to find out how many people you can fit on a blimp. I'm still
looking.
Well, you don't
put
them
in the big part. You put them on. You put them underneath. You know, like
I know you don't put them in the big thing. I mean, I'm not going to throw someone in this giant, like, hot air thing. Oh, so that means, by the way, this is from Field Yates, that Mahomes' deal would surpass Mike Trout's contract, which, as we all know, is the richest contract in sports. So now we're looking at another deal that is going to be the richest contract in all of sports.
But here's the difference. Baseball isn't salary capped, and the Angels don't have to worry about that. If he breaks down, meaning Mahomes, and he's tied to the salary cap, they're going to be in big trouble. See, the problem, I don't mind awarding a part of the salary cap to a player, but not over that period of time. That's the part that seems risky. You want to give him a long contract, but not make that guarantee? Fine. You want to make that guarantee, but make it like 5 or 6 years? Fine.
Yeah.
But 10 years with that percentage?
Well, I think
I don't know if I'm willing to. That's a risky deal for the team.
I think that that's why the Chiefs are probably, or excuse me, Mahomes and his agent are probably pushing for it, because it's like, well, what if we ask for a certain amount that isn't a percentage in 2030 as part of our deal, and that ends up being like 7% of your salary cap? Like, that's insane. Russell Wilson's making 13%+. You know, that's far lower than other quarterbacks would be making.
We'll bring in Shannon Dreher on the hotline right now. Shannon, how are you this Monday morning or Monday afternoon?
Not bad. You guys?
Well,
we were trying to decide before if you were optimistic enough to tell us that everything's going to be all right with this baseball season. Forget about how the Mariners play. But, you know, if you're, in your medical opinion, COVID is going to end up shutting this whole thing down. How are you feeling right now?
Well, I think it goes to the old baseball adage, we're just going to take everything one day at a time. I mean, everything is so unknown with this disease that I don't know why it would be, you know, baseball would be exempt and you would be able to make predictions of what could go on. You know, it's been interesting to watch how everything was so focused on, we got to get him out on the field, we got to get him out on the field, we got to get him out on the field. And the minute they get out on the field, it's what are they doing out on the field? And I think that it was to be expected that there were going to be some hiccups in the protocol, which we saw with a couple of teams not being able to practice today because they didn't get their results back. And I think the important thing was that they called off those practices. So, yeah, I think everybody is adhering to what has been dictated that they do to try and keep everybody safe. But it's a process in people getting comfortable with it and not just wearing the mask, but you know, getting out there, understanding what's going on around them and determining, can I really do this or not? And I think that's why we have seen some opt-outs over the last few days. It's one thing to sit at home and say, yeah, I can do this. I think a lot of the veteran players said, I need to kind of get into it a little bit and feel and see what it looks like and then go from there. But on the Mariners' part, it seems like it has been quite smooth. You've seen the adjustments that guys have made the first day. Not a lot were wearing masks on the field. Today, just about everyone was for everything but batting practice and the pitchers who were pitching. So I think it's just something that is going to continue to evolve, and the key is going to be that testing has got to be on point. It's got to be on time, and they've got to be able to follow up on that for guys to have any kind of feeling and safety in what they're doing.
Are we going to have spring training games? Like, are those scheduled at all, or is it just practices?
Each team is allowed to have up to 3 exhibition games before the season starts. That's not going to work for the Mariners because there's no one nearby. So you might see like the Yankees and the Mets square off against each other. Regional teams that are close and can do that are going to do that. The rest are just going to have to, you know, get everything that they can get done in intra-squad games. And for the Mariners, that's going to start on the 10th. And these aren't going to be full 9-inning games, probably just 5 or 6 innings to start. But that's how the pitchers are going to have to get their innings. That's how the hitters are going to have to get their at-bats. And that's what we're going to see the taxi squad doing for the 2 months that they're in Tacoma.
It sounds like Service had a lot of good things to say about Kyle Lewis in particular. And then I think he mentioned Evan White kind of unprompted. What did he say about those two guys?
Well, I think Kyle Lewis was the first one that caught his eye on day one. And, you know, he came in and looked, Scott Service was really happy with what he saw from everyone. And just remember, it's just a great unknown. Nobody knows what these players were able to do without their normal, for the most part, training routines in being away from the team. And they were impressed with what they were able to do. And a lot of guys, the majority of guys, came in better than they thought they would. And Kyle Lewis, by all reports, a little bit stronger. His batting practice looked good. What he did during the shutdown, he kept up a full schedule. He had his speed coach that he was able to work with a couple of days a week. He had his hitting coach, which was his high school coach, able to work with him for a couple of days, and another coach that I can't even think of. But he basically was all baseball that entire time. And it really depended on where you were in the country and what you were able to do. But in the Atlanta area, he was able to get out and continue his baseball activity. And he just doesn't look like he's missed a beat. But the interesting thing with Kyle Lewis and talking to him, as you remember, he had that catastrophic knee injury. He still hasn't played a full season, and he is not going to play a full season this year. So, you know, anything that he can get this year is so important. But let's remember, this guy is a top pick for them, and there were big expectations. So it's great when you hear that he looks even better than expected at this point.
One thing we were talking about that I don't know if we've had a chance to talk to you at length about it, but we've just been going back and forth, is Mitch Haniger. Do you have an update on when we could see him, if we'll see him this year, and then maybe if there are any other injuries that we need to know about with this team right now?
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to get to the bottom on the Haniger issue. He was placed on the 60-day IL, which is actually a 45-day IL right now, which is actually retroactive to a week ago from Sunday. So he would be eligible to play games. And what I don't understand right now is how you bring him back, because unless you are on the 60-man roster, you're not allowed to practice. So the best of my knowledge, he's not here right now, not working out. So I think he is still in California. I think he is working with physical therapists to come back from the back and the core surgeries. So I felt optimistic when I initially heard that, oh, well, he could be eligible about 20 games in. But then to hear that he's not here right now, I don't feel as optimistic about that. But I also don't believe I have the complete picture. And I'm going to have to track down Jerry DePoto and get a little bit more on that.
Just a reminder, everything that Shannon writes, her notebook, all the articles are up at 710sports.com. And, you know, Shannon, you've got a couple of things on there, just what's going on nationally around baseball. The statement from Nationals GM Mike Rizzo about them shutting down their practices today. And I saw Sean Doolittle just in a press conference a minute ago on MLB Network. He's doing the press conference with it wasn't even a mask. It looked like a scarf or something. And I saw that some of these players are going to start by playing with the mask on. But have you talked to anybody who thinks that, like, that might be restrictive? Like, wouldn't that kind of suffocate you after a while if you're running around?
Well, we've seen Dee Gordon and Kyle Seager do it for entire practices the last 2 days, so it can be done on the hitting side. The pitching side, Sean Manaea came out today and said he might try and pitch with it on. And we just spoke with Justice Sheffield, and his brother is a pitcher in the Dodgers organization. His brother has actually talked to an expert and found some breathing exercises that he could do that would help him learn to pitch with a mask on. And Justice said, I don't think I'm going to do that right now, but I'm going to learn that in case that is something that we have to do. So I don't think you'll see very many pitchers with that on. I do think you might see some players out on the field with a mask. I remember when the KBO, the Korean Baseball Organization, got going, at the first game that they had, a lot of the players wore masks, and then after that, you didn't see it again on the field.
That sounds like a lot of work to me, man. I wouldn't want to be doing that, but I don't know.
That's why you're not a Major League Baseball player, Tom.
Is that the reason, Shannon?
That's the only reason.
Because I can't play with a surgical mask over my mouth? Is that the reason?
It's the breathing and only the breathing.
Okay, I'll give you that. All right, Shannon, thanks for coming on. We appreciate
it. Thanks, Shannon.
All right, guys.
All right. Halftime show is coming up next. We'll get to everything we talked about for the first hour and a half of the show. That's next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Big news of the day. Patrick Mahomes is a rich... I'm not going to even call him a rich man, Stacey. He's still a rich kid at age 24. He's being rewarded with a 10-year deal by the Kansas City Chiefs worth over $400 million that is rumored to be tied to the team's salary cap. So as the salary cap goes up every year, his guaranteed money essentially appreciates every single year for the next 10 years. That is a crazy deal. Graz was saying that he agreed with the deal for the team. I don't get it for the team. I really don't, because we went through four of those other deals before, four of those long-term deals that historically have been handed out. Donovan McNabb, Brett Favre, Drew Bledsoe, Michael Vick. None of those guys finished their careers with the team that gave out that contract. I mean, that's something to consider. We don't really know how durable Patrick Mahomes is because he's only played a couple of years. He's played, 2 years in the league? So, I mean, I understand wanting to reward him with that, Stacey. I just think it's super risky to be doing that.
It's risky. I mean, anytime you have a contract that would essentially cover the length of two contracts, say you get a four-year extension each time, you risk... you're betting on that second half of that contract being just as great as the first. And I'm sure what the Chiefs were worried about is, all right, if we give him this contract extension now and say that he becomes a free agent in 2025 or 2024, actually it would be later because it would be an extension on 2-year deal. So say that he becomes a free agent in 2026. Well, now who are we battling with to try to re-sign him? I mean, we're counting on him still being great in his late 20s, so we might as well just continue it. It's a risk for sure, but the fact that he's incredibly young and has been so successful and is in a system that just works perfectly for him is, I think, a benefit to Kansas City undoubtedly. And one thing I want to add, that contract is reportedly over $400 million, according to Adam Schefter, although Schefter adds that because Patrick Mahomes still has 2 years remaining on his existing deal, the lowest that this contract could be worth is $427.6 million, which is about a little over a million more than Mike Trout's. So it would now be, presumably, Patrick Mahomes' deal, the largest contract ever in North American sports history. Pretty wild.
What did you mean when you just said that in 2026 he could become a free agent? Wouldn't he not become one until the length of his deal is over?
No, I'm saying if you were to do like a 4-year extension or something, because he has 2 years remaining on his contract, not one.
Gotcha. All right, next story. Scott Service, very excited about one particular Mariner, as are we. Go ahead and roll cut six, Curtis.
I mentioned it early on. He's one of the guys that stood out to me. I just thought he was moving so differently. Watching him shagging fly balls in the outfield, and that's a direct reflection of the work that he put in, you know, while we were down at home, and he took it serious. I know he's got a speed coach, a strength coach, hitting coach. You know, he dialed in with all those people, and he looks much different.
Kyle Lewis is the guy he's talking about there. We were kind of joking about all the coaches he's got surrounding him. A speed coach, a strength coach, and a hitting coach. But I wonder how much those people make. Like, he's got to be paying them out of his own pocket, right?
You thinking of becoming Kyle's strength coach and speed coach?
Well, no, I'm not, because I'm not qualified. But if I did want to become, I mean, what do you pay those guys? Like $100,000 a year, $70,000? That's a lot to be doling out to somebody who's your personal coach for one specific purpose. Like, I wonder sometimes what Russell pays Jake, if anything. But, you know, we're never going to get that answer out of him, obviously. But is it worth it to have all those different... I mean, does a baseball player really need a speed coach? He's a left fielder. He's only going to be able to move as fast as he can move, right?
I mean, I think so. I mean, I wonder if... first of all, I think you have to admire that dedication, especially from a young player. I wonder if part of it, too, is just wanting to make sure that you can get every part of your body and your game right coming back from a catastrophic knee injury. And Scott Service kind of spoke to that. Was it yesterday or the other day? I think the other day, saying that you might be physically back, but mentally it takes a while to kind of catch up to feeling like you're okay. And it is encouraging to see Kyle Lewis take all of this on and saying that he looked even better. So maybe that's part of it, right? Maybe bringing in those guys is part of that extra effort to just feel like yourself again.
Do I sound like grumpy old man on this issue?
No, I think you sound like you're making your pitch to Kyle Lewis for his being his speed coach.
There's not a whole lot I could teach him about speed, believe you me. I might be able to teach him something about hitting.
Like, I think I could
hey
run
man,
a...
You get two strikes on you. You choke up on that bat.
You can be his hitting coach. I'll be his speed coach. I feel like I can run very quickly.
But again, like... he can only run so far. Like a strength coach, I get.
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody, a personal trainer to help you. Like, hey, man, here's the weight room. Here's how you can best use it. Right? You don't necessarily know that going in. Hitting, maybe. But isn't that what the hitting coach of the team is for? I don't know. Now I definitely am sounding like grumpy old man about it.
Knock it off.
Oh, man. We intermittently here, in between all this news about Patrick Mahomes, we've snuck in some discussion about Antonio Brown because over the weekend, that video of him emerged of him working out with our guy, Russell Wilson, right? And we're all wondering, like, what the heck's going on? You know, is he going to be part of this team? Do they need him? Does having an elite wide receiver like that necessarily turn into championships? The answer, we don't know. But, Stacey, I put out a Twitter poll here. Would you like to know the results of it so far?
Yes.
All right. We got 1,200 votes on this. Exactly. The question is, which scenario do you like the most? Okay. Seattle gets Clowney. Seattle gets Brown. Seattle gets both Brown and Clowney. Or Seattle gets neither. Okay, for Seattle gets Clowney, we got 50%.
I voted for that one.
50% of those voting. You voted for that one? Okay.
I voted for
think that. Now, by the way, this is what you would like to happen, not what you think is going to happen.
Yes.
4% would like to just get Antonio Brown. 31% would like both. And 15% would like neither.
I appreciate the optimism of the people that voted for both on just the salary cap in general. Both. Why not?
Yeah, just go get him.
Yeah.
But as you pointed out before, though, Stacey,
mm-hmm.
the most likely scenario of these four might be the one that nobody likes, which is Antonio Brown coming here.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that comes from an affordability standpoint. Brown, obviously, one of the best receivers in NFL history, would certainly help the team. But he's coming off of a lot of problems. I mean, you have to worry about potentially him being dealt a suspension. You have to, you know, worry about plenty of other locker room stuff if that's something that you're really considering. But because of those two things, he will be somewhat cheaper than he would have been a couple years ago. Clowney is still clearly looking for far more than teams are willing to offer him. And we have to assume that that's got to be more than like 10 to 13 million, right? I'm assuming he's looking for like no less than 17, maybe 16.
See, that's what I thought. And we got that report from Cecil Lammy this morning saying that the Raiders had made a good offer to him, but there were two or three teams other than the Raiders that had better offers into him. So, and again, like you're saying, is it 13, 14? Like, what is it? And are the Seahawks one of those two or three teams? Mm-hmm. I'd be surprised if they were at that dollar amount, at $13
million,
given that we already think that they offered them that, right? I don't think that they're going to go up now. That wouldn't really make much sense. All right, coming up next, we got a couple of different stories for you. The groundswell over the Washington NFL franchise name is having an impact, believe it or not, for once. We'll talk about that next on the Timeline. 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Welcome back into Tom, Jake, and Stacey. It's The Timeline, one of my favorite segments. Reading you the top stories that you're going to see on your own timelines. If you want us to include any, whether it be today or just something you think we might like for later this week, tag us at Stacey Rost, at Tom Wassel, at JT Heaps 9. Even though Jake is out for a few days here, I think you should still tag him. It's fun. Let's do it.
Send it only to him.
Yeah, send it only to Jake. Let's go ahead and get things started with the results of the famous hot dog eating contest. Once again, who's surprised? Joey Chestnut took it. So Chestnut, this is, I'm just going to read it from ESPN because it's my favorite excerpt from today. Chestnut, 36, wolfed down a world record 75 hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes on Saturday to win the mustard yellow belt for the 13th time in 14 years. 75 hot dogs. It was hard, said Chestnut, who consumed roughly 21,000 calories. I like the idea of like, yeah, it wasn't easy eating 75 hot dogs. Really? 10 minutes. 10 minutes. How many hot dogs do you think you could eat in 10 minutes?
One.
If you were trying.
Not even.
No, if you were trying and you weren't worried about throwing up.
No, I would be worried about throwing up because it's inevitable that I would if I ate more than one in 10 minutes.
You can't be afraid of it.
There's no getting around that. Okay, but I am. I'm terrified of it. I don't know. God, this guy Chestnut, you know, he's not exactly, he's a slim guy. All these people are who do this. I don't understand how, I mean, is this something you work at where the more you do it, the bigger your stomach, like your actual stomach becomes where you can contract it that far and you just dump food in there? I don't know how that works. I mean, I certainly couldn't do it.
There's got to be some technique to it. The person who finished second had 42 hot dogs and buns. So that means Joey Chestnut's out here like lapping people with the number of hot dogs he's eating. Oh, God, I can't even think about it.
Do you think that this would be a better sport if there were more competition and it weren't so dominated
that's what it
by
is.
One person?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Joey Chestnut is out here, and it's like Bama playing these tiny schools, and it's like, let's get Clemson in here. You know what I mean? Let's bring in Auburn even. Like, bring in some competition for Joey Chestnut. Can someone pass 50? Like, can we get someone past 60? He'd still have a 15-hot-dog lead. Yeah, it's not as exciting. We need some competition to come in here.
One last question on this, okay?
Yes.
And now I'm gonna turn this all serious, and people are gonna get mad at me. But with so many people starving in the world, going hungry at night, is this an offensive contest?
It's a fair question. I think it's something that's more funny than anything to anyone, but I do think there are people that fairly question, like, hey, guys, we're eating hot dogs until we're sick in a place where there are people that legitimately are, like, starving.
Imagine, like, you are starving to death, like, you're living wherever, and you get wind of this. It's like, man, you know, can I get one of those hot dogs? I'm not saying that to be funny. I mean that. Like, it's... It seems wasteful and stupid.
It would feel less wasteful if someone could come in there and give Joey a run for his money. Somehow that would make it a better use of hot dogs, I think.
If it were more entertaining to us, that would make everything
If it
okay.
wasn't just like we're feeding Joey Chestnut. If instead it was like Joey Chestnut's racing someone. We're feeding Joey Chestnut.
It's like a... It's a telethon or a marathon just to make Joey Chestnut gets fed.
It's the one day a year he gets to eat, and he just makes the most of it. You know what I mean? Gosh. Okay.
I don't like it.
Next story on here is, one of the biggest stories in sports before the Mahomes news this morning, although it will obviously continue to be a major story. Washington Redskins minority owners want to sell their stakes. So this from USA Today, Snyder once told, writer Eric Brady in 2013, quote, "We'll never change the name. It's that simple. Never. You can use caps." Well, how does this happen now? Because there's a lot of public pressure. And I have to say, as an aside, one of my least favorite things to come out of this, the most recent iteration of this conversation, is people thinking that this somehow is like a reactionary. I hate it when people say it's like PC culture. This is a name that's been controversial for years and years and years, and that predates 2020. And I still can't believe that the name is there. It's a literal slur. I feel weird even reading it.
Yeah, if you look at the origins, you can look this up. I don't really want to get into it. This goes back to their owner, their owner from like the 30s, who named the team the Redskins, and they actually just tore down his statue outside the stadium not long ago, just a couple of weeks ago. It's real, just ugly, racist stuff. But as you were saying before the show, the only way to really get them to change this name is for the other owners to put pressure on Snyder to do that. And what's it going to take for that to happen? Is it going to take societal pressure? Is it going to take some sort of like financial loss? People, fans boycotting the team? I mean, look, the team's bad enough already where you think that people wouldn't go. And I know that they don't fill those seats because I think that's the biggest stadium in the NFL at 90,000.
Yeah.
And I know they don't fill it for all their games. But there's still a big deal in that town and in that area. I mean, look, if Goodell doesn't do it, if the owners don't do it, Snyder doesn't really have any reason to change the name unless he just looks into his conscience and says, I don't want to be the guy to have this hanging over his team. I mean, in the 90s, when Abe Pollin, who was the owner of the Washington Bullets, when he suddenly became uncomfortable with that team name, mm-hmm. because Washington, D.C. was such a dangerous area and he didn't like the team, the name Bullets, he had it changed. The fans voted on it and they voted Wizards. That's because the owner was uncomfortable. Here, the owner's not all that uncomfortable. I mean, he hasn't been since the beginning of time. So why would he change it now unless he's forced to?
That's the thing. I don't think he cares. I don't know that there's going to be a lot of pressure from the owners. They're typically out of this stuff, and this is going to sound really pessimistic, but I don't know that I have a lot of faith that the majority of the owners care that much. I think that they are satisfied being out of the spotlight, with the exception of one very notable owner, and I think they're comfortable like trying to dodge any kind of responsibility or advocate for anything at all, and maybe they don't care. But I think that there's going to be a combination of societal pressure, which there has been, but more recently I think the financial pressure is becoming more than it was. The fact that Nike took down their merchandise and that FedEx of FedEx Field is calling for a change, I think those two things are big. And I do think that that's a notable difference.
As you said before about the Patrick Mahomes contract, like once it happens once, it's likely to happen again and again and again. With the Nike thing and them taking the Washington team off of their menu completely, I could see other big sponsors following suit and that leading to a problem for Snyder. It might take that kind of pressure, but, you know, we're just not there yet. We got anything else?
I do want to play you this sound. It's from new Patriots quarterback Cam Newton. And cut number 8 here, Cam has a message for all of us.
You don't choose that over there. I'm gonna stay there. I'm getting tired of being humble now.
Cam Newton, tired of being humble. Same.
His extended quote is, it's a little vulgar, but he's tired of being humble. Like, how long has Cam Newton been humble exactly? Like 5 minutes this offseason?
I mean, we
maybe?
All start somewhere, you know.
But he's already tired of it, Stacey. He's
like, I've been
tired
super into
humble.
Working out every day for 5 minutes. We'll see how it goes, but everyone needs to start somewhere. Don't start tomorrow, start today. I'm fine with it. That's it.
You can be humble or you can be showy and brash and arrogant. Like, if you want to be a professional, it works either way.
We've seen
athletes succeed both ways. If that's the way he has to be to succeed, then that's what the Patriots
cool
signed on for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's it.
You're cool with what?
with Cam Newton being exactly the way he is.
Being not humble.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I love personality. Bring it.
God, we only have 1 minute here, but I so just want to refute that.
Do it. Do it. 30 seconds.
Here's the thing. I like personality too, but that doesn't mean every big personality is a good one.
That's true.
Like when people criticize us for saying like, oh, you always criticize athletes for not saying anything. And then somebody says something and you criticize them. It's like, yeah, because just because you say something, it doesn't make it good. Like some things are worth being critical of. That's just the way it is. But I also root for Cam Newton. We're back in a second. Know Your Seahawk, Joey Hunt edition. Big time. 710 ESPN Seattle.